So it's Mark 14, verse 27 to 52. "You will all fall away," Jesus told them, "for it is written, 'I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep will be scattered.' But after I have risen, I will go ahead of you into Galilee." Peter declared, "Even if I fall away, I will not." "I tell you the truth," Jesus answered, "today, yes, tonight, before the cock crows twice, you yourself will disown me three times." But Peter instantly, emphatically, "Even if I have to die with you, I will never disown you." And all the others said the same. They went to a place called Gethsemane, and Jesus said to his disciples, "Sit here while I pray." He took Peter, James, and John along with him, and he began to be deeply distressed and troubled. "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death," he said to them. "Stay here and keep watch." Going a little farther, he fell to the ground and prayed that, if possible, the hour might pass from him. "Abba, Father," he said, "everything is possible for you. Take this cup from me, yet not what I will, but what you will." Then he returned to his disciples and found them sleeping. "Simon," he said to Peter, "are you asleep? Could you not keep watch for 1 hour? Watch and pray so that you will not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the body is weak." Once more he went away and prayed the same thing. When he came back, he again found them sleeping because their eyes were heavy. They did not know what to say to him. Returning the third time, he said to them, "Are you still sleeping and resting? Enough. The hour has come. Look, the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let's go. Here comes my betrayer." Just as he was speaking, Judas, one of the 12, appeared. With him was a crowd armed with swords and clubs, sent from the chief priests, the teachers of the law, and the elders. Now the betrayer had arranged a signal with them: "The one I kiss is the man. Arrest him and lead him away under guard." Going at once to Jesus, Judas said, "Rabbi," and kissed him. The men seized Jesus and arrested him. Then one of those standing near drew his sword and struck the servant of the high priest, cutting off his ear. "Am I leading a rebellion," said Jesus, "that you have come out with swords and clubs to capture me? Every day I was with you teaching in the temple courts, and you did not arrest me. But the scriptures must be fulfilled." Then everyone deserted him and fled. A young man wearing nothing but a linen garment was following Jesus. When they seized him, he fled naked, leaving his garment behind.
Well, a very good morning, everyone. How are you doing? Oh, it's always lovely to come and be with you. I do enjoy the times when we are able to be here and to be able to share God's word with you. But just to be with you, actually, it's always lovely to renew friendships. We brought Jerry with us today. I don't know if many know Jerry. Some do, I know. Angela and myself, well, we've both lost our mums. They both passed away a number of years ago. And Jerry is our adopted mum. So I feel it was fitting that she should be with us today. And there we go. I rather think Jerry is an adopted mum for a lot of people, actually. She is a mother in Israel, isn't she? Bless her. The British Forces Foundation is a charity that exists to boost the morale of those who are in the armed forces. Now, for my part, I haven't been very aware of this foundation. But for a while, I realised that there's a younger generation coming up behind me who are very, very aware of the British Forces Foundation. In fact, they actively promote the name of the British Forces Foundation so often. You see, very often when they're texting their friends, they finish off with the initials BFF, which of course stands for the British Forces Foundation, until Someone pointed out to me, I don't think it's anything to do with the British Forces Foundation. You see, BFF is one of those text message abbreviations for Best Friends Forever. So I was wrong. And my talk has nothing to do with the British Forces Foundation. Neither do those initials, really. It is in their website address, as you can see. But apparently, there's a young generation around, and they're all best friends with one another, and they'll sign their text messages off to each other with BFF, Best Friends Forever. Now, in the main, we have friends, I hope. I wonder if you have a best friend. I wonder if you have a group of people that you would count as your close friends. Well, we all need friends, especially at times of need, when friends can just rally round, support one another, help one another, encourage one another. And friendship really counts. Now, Jesus, of course, had 12 close friends. We refer to them as his disciples or his followers. And I know that last week, if you were here, you would have heard all about a very special time when Jesus was with these 12 people, these 12 close friends, his disciples. And he established with them what often we call communion, or the breaking of bread, or the Lord's Supper. And you really sense that there was a closeness. For Jesus to be with these 12 and to establish this with them. Because he chose to be with them when he took bread and he took the cup and spoke of these as being symbolic of his body that was to be broken on the cross. He hasn't been to the cross yet. He's looking ahead. He's looking forward. And the cup, symbolic of his blood to be shed for the sins of many. And I'm referring to a talk that you had last week, if you were here, but actually right in front of us on this table, they stand, bread and the cup. But don't you sense the closeness of friendship? Jesus with these 12, and it's with them that he does this, bread and wine. And of course, Jesus is about to face the cross. And the events that have been read to us are just part of the many events that led immediately up to his crucifixion. And Jesus himself is about to face the cross. So how do his close friends support him through this experience? After all, isn't it now when real friendship counts? Jesus is going to face a lot. Facing the cross alone is a lot, but everything around it too. Surely this is when friendship counts. And these 12 that he's already shared, dare I say, an intimate time with them, a very close time, they're going to stand with him, aren't they? They're going to support him. They're going to be with him. They're going to encourage him. Except if you listened closely to the words that were read to us, I find they didn't actually do that. And then I wonder, what kind of friends were they? I'd like to talk today about choosing friends. You know, over a week ago, I had a birthday. And a birthday card came through the letterbox. And it had this sentiment: Never laugh at your wife's choices. You are one of them. We choose our friends. And yes, we choose a partner for life. I married her, and we've been together for many, many years. And this is a choice we make, a choice of friends, of people to walk through life with. And the story that we've had read to us make me think along these sort of lines. And I don't know if you've started thinking along similar lines, because I'm wondering about Jesus' choice of friends. Let's consider this just for a moment. At the start, Jesus specifically chose these 12 people. And the earlier accounts of the Gospels, and we've read from Mark, that's just one of four Gospels. These are four men's accounts of the birth and the life and the death and the resurrection of Jesus. Mark has written down his account, and I know that's what you're looking through and have been and continue to do so. And these accounts speak of an earlier time when Jesus chose these 12. And they were specifically chosen. They're mentioned by name. Jesus spotted them. He noticed them. He saw them. And he asked them, be with me. Follow me. Spend your life with me. And they did. And then for around 3 years, they have been with Jesus. They've followed him. They've listened to what he's had to say as he's been teaching everyone about the love of God. And they've watched what Jesus did. They saw the amazing miracles that he performed. So they've actually experienced a lot together. And often they were amazed at what they heard. They were amazed at what they saw. And I think more and more there was a greater sense of, I want to be with this man. I want to follow him. I want to see what he's going to do next. It's absolutely amazing. But then we hit this current situation when in the heat of the moment, you could argue at the time of Jesus' greatest need for them to be with him, for them to be stood beside him, an expectation friends rally round now, don't they? But what happens? Jesus chooses friends, but, and this is a big but, Peter is going to deny even knowing him. Peter, James, and John, they're just going to fall asleep. When Jesus was in a moment of torment, anticipating the cross, they're just going to fall asleep. Judas, he is going to betray Jesus to the authorities. And every single one of them are going to run away. And that's how the verses for today started, with Jesus saying to them, you're all going to run away. When someone smites the shepherd, the sheep will scatter. And then at the end of that scripture we had read to us, that's exactly what we saw. So what conclusions do we draw about friendship? What conclusions do we draw about Jesus' choice of friends, given what has now happened and what is about to happen? I mean, I get where you are with the titles. I mean, the title for today, this is all about Jesus, of course. And the title for today is describing the narrative. Jesus warns Peter, you're going to deny me. Jesus prays in the Garden of Gethsemane. and Jesus is betrayed. But I find myself slightly wanting to rename the talk, and if I was to call it anything, I'd almost say, with friends like these, who needs enemies? I mean, honestly, these are his disciples, his followers, his closest, his friends. With friends like these, who needs enemies? Have you got friends like that? Stop looking at each other. What do you think of Jesus' choice of friends? You're going to fall probably in one camp or another. One, do we conclude Jesus was a poor judge of people? How could he choose such unreliable people as his friends? Is that the conclusion? Or do we conclude that Jesus was prepared to give everyone an opportunity to follow him? Now, I know where I'm leaning, because I don't look at this and think, Jesus, what a poor choice of friends you make. And yet my humanity thinks, wow, of all the people you could have had as your closest friends, you chose these. One's going to deny you. One's going to betray you. They're going to fall asleep when you need them. They're all going to run away. You're choosing them because he gives everyone an opportunity to follow him, to receive God's love, to be forgiven, to receive new life, to receive the grace and the mercy of God that he pours out. He gives everyone, no matter who you are, that opportunity. I'd like us to really learn this today and grasp the truth that sits underneath that. Because I think the Lord here demonstrates to us a fundamental truth about God. On one side, yes, this is what happens. Peter denies. Peter, James, and John, they fall asleep. Judas betrays all of them, deserts him. But on God's side of the equation, he has no bias, no discrimination. There's no favoring the rich or favoring the clever. God wants all to turn to him. God is willing to receive all who would come. And he's not willing that any should die. And here we have Jesus choosing a diverse group of people to follow him, even people who are going to let him down when the difficult time comes. And I believe that not one single person in this room today can say, God doesn't love me. God doesn't want me. God wouldn't choose me. Because I think the Lord Jesus has demonstrated a fundamental truth about God, is that he is willing to have you and me. We have let him down. We will let him down. He still wants you and me. Oh, that we would grasp that. I mean, Peter could have said at the start, Jesus, why are you choosing me? Don't choose me, because when the heat is on, I'm likely to lie. And I'd actually deny even knowing you. So Jesus, don't choose me, because that's what I'm like. Judas might have said to Jesus, don't choose me, because when faced with the temptation, I will choose money first. I might even betray you to the authorities for a price. So don't choose me. James and John might have said to Jesus, don't choose us, because in your deepest hour of sorrow, we're likely to give in to tiredness. We're just going to give up and fall asleep when you could do with us staying awake by your side. In fact, all of them could have said, Jesus, don't choose us. Because when the going gets tough, we will probably run away. And yet he chose them. The point is this. Jesus did choose these vulnerable, flawed, weak people to follow him. He wanted them warts and all, if you like. His acceptance of them was not conditional on their goodness or their strength or their talent. He received them just as they were. There is something special, isn't there, about being chosen? How many times has someone chosen you as a friend, chosen you to do something specific for them, and you'd count that an honor? And we feel the privilege of being chosen, being accepted. What, me? You want me? You choose me to do this? And we feel honored and privileged. You know, when I was at school, I played in the sixth form in a hockey team. We created the hockey team ourselves as students, actually, because the school wasn't really running a hockey team at all. But it was something we enjoyed. We learned playing hockey together and we created our own team. And I was chosen as the captain of the hockey team. What a privilege. What an honor. I wish I could say I was chosen on the basis of my skill. The reality is they chose me because what they said was, Derek, you're the only one here who won't swear at the ref. Because they knew I was a Christian, they knew I didn't swear, and that was the basis of their choice. So suddenly the privilege went down a little bit. But nevertheless, I will go round and say to people, I captained the hockey team at school. But there is a privilege, isn't there, of being chosen. And I kind of want to say this, God chooses you. And you may well say, don't choose me, God. Look at me, I'm a mess. Look at what I've done. I've not lived a particularly good life and you choose me. You know, I've messed up in my life. I've sinned against you. I've sworn, I've stolen, I've lied. You choose me. And God says, I will have you. He had these. He'll have us. What a privilege. What an honor. It's a real privilege to be chosen. Trouble is... we respond in a different way sometimes. God chooses us. Jesus wants us to follow him. And sometimes we respond like this, I'm not ready. I will trust in God when I am ready. And I do want to point people to what Paul wrote to the Corinthians when he said, look, now is the time of God's favor. Now is the day of salvation. I want to tell people to trust God now. There can be this sort of response, well, I'm just not ready for God just yet. I'm not ready to follow Jesus. And I just want to say, now is the time. When will you be ready? What are you waiting for to be ready? Just receive him now. Turn to him now. Follow Jesus now. Some respond with a, well, I'm not good enough. I will become a Christian when I'm a good person and my life is good enough for him. Except it was when we were sinners that Christ died for us. And God showed his love to us. that when we were in a state of being sinners and we were weak and we were helpless, we were lost, we were broken, it was then that he chooses us. We'll never be good enough. We've just got to come. Sometimes people will say, well, I'm not wanted. If Jesus really knew me, he wouldn't want me. If he knew the deepest secrets that I hide, he wouldn't want me. If he really knew what kind of life I've lived, he wouldn't want me. Except even Jesus himself said, look, it's not the healthy who need a doctor, it's the sick. And I've not come to call those who are good and righteous, I've come to call sinners. Jesus knows all about us, still loves us, still wants us. He actually came for the ordinary, for the broken, people like you, people like me. And dare I suggest that maybe you're already here and you're thinking, well, look, I'm already a Christian. To be honest, I've already made this choice to follow Jesus. But I sometimes wonder, there are times when God calls us. Calls us to do something for him. Calls us to go somewhere for him. Calls us to a specific activity, a specific work. And we make these same excuses. Lord, I'm not ready. Lord, I'm not good enough. Lord, surely not me. You don't really mean me. If you knew me, you wouldn't choose me to do this. And I just wonder, even as Christians, we can sometimes hold back from what God is calling us to because we make these excuses. Lord, you really don't want me. Except he does. And the call that he has given to us stands. He still calls us. He still wants us. I wonder if anyone's here in that situation. God's got a calling on your life and you've really been holding back on it. And it's been one of these excuses or another. Not yet. Not me. How would you want me to do that? Except that he does. I do want to emphasize this. The disciples let Jesus down. I think that's obvious. I mean, that's obvious from this point. I mean, you haven't come to the cross yet, and you will do. Well, we're coming to Easter, and you're coming towards the end of Mark's gospel. You're going to arrive at the cross. You're going to arrive at the resurrection of Jesus. But even here, at this point, they failed him. They've let him down. But there was always a way back. There was always forgiveness on offer. Three times Peter denied knowing Jesus. Three times Jesus gave Peter the opportunity to reaffirm his love. Three times Jesus gave Peter a job to do in the church. Peter, yes, you've denied me three times, but I'll still have you, still want you. Will you follow me still, even though you did that? Always a way back. I love that. The disciples, they fell asleep during the night of Jesus' distress. He was anticipating the cross. They fell asleep. Well, there was another night. This time they stayed awake. In fact, those that were fishermen, and this is after the cross, after the resurrection, they'd gone fishing all night, caught nothing. And Jesus is there. And he helps them to catch fish. More than that, he makes them breakfast. Interesting, isn't it? Nothing about, well, you stayed up all night fishing, but you couldn't stay awake for me, could you, at my point of need? No, we don't get that. Nor do we get, you couldn't watch and pray when I needed it, so in your need of fishing, I'm not going to help you. Don't get that. No bitterness, no revenge, just love. All the disciples ran away, leaving Jesus alone. And later on, we find that still afraid, still hiding in a locked room together, the risen Jesus appears to them. Now, does he come with a word of judgment? Does he come pointing out their cowardice, the way they deserted him, the way they ran away from him? No, he says, peace be with you. I mean, this is amazing stuff. No judgment, just blessing. Always a way back. Always forgiveness. So when we do mess up, always a way back to God. Always a road of forgiveness to walk. And Jesus chooses us. In order to make friendship with God possible, he had to go to the cross. All through these verses that were read to us, there were points at which any one of us, we would have given up. Honestly, I think we would have. Would have given up, would have been distracted, would have just said, that's enough, this far and no further. But not with the Lord. He went to the bitter end. So Peter denies him. Judas betrays him. Peter, James and John fall asleep. They all desert him. But still, the Lord allowed himself to be arrested, as he was on this occasion, to be taken. And I think you'll find the rest of the story over the next couple of weeks. Nothing was going to deter him from this one aim. I have to go to the cross. I have to die. I have to give my life. My blood will be shed. Why? So that you can be friends with God. This is the way, the only way. Don't you feel loved by God? Don't you sense his love? That Jesus went so far to bring us into friendship and relationship. He knows my darkest and deepest secrets, yet he loves me. He chooses me. He knows my failings, my weaknesses, my sin, yet he loves me. He chooses me. He knows that there will be times yet when I will let him down, yet he loves me. He chooses me. And I believe with all my heart that when Jesus died on the cross, he had my name on his heart. He has your name. So, he chooses us. Do we choose him? Has God got a calling on your life and you're holding back? He's choosing you for that purpose and you're holding back. Isn't it time you said, yes, Lord? He chooses us. It's time for us to choose him. May God just bless these thoughts to us. They're simple thoughts. But wow. Really, wow. He loves us. He chooses us. No longer to be servants. He says, I choose you. Call you friends. Come and follow me. May God bless his word to us. Thank you.